Today's podcast is brought to you by, for the first time,
two
sponsors.
Hey.
We are literally growing by dozens of dollars a day.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
This is fantastic. And we should preface these sponsorship bits by saying that we only accept sponsors on the podcast if they have a product that we really support, believe in, and or use if possible.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we can't use the first sponsor's product, Health IQ, because they are US life insurance and we are Canadians.
But it's still amazing because it's something that you used to rant and rave about all the time when you were an investment advisor, the fact that healthy people paid more for life insurance than unhealthy people, but no more.
Yes. Health IQ has set up their company in such a way that triathletes, swimmers, cyclists, runners, vegans, people who take care of themselves can get as much as a 25% savings on their life insurance, which really just makes sense. That's the way that it should be. That was one of the ranty and ravey things because guys like me, I had to pay just as much as
the burger and fries, never getting off the couch guy.
Yes. Yes. Not ideal. If you want to learn more about Health IQ, go to healthiq.com/triathlonTaryn. They've bundled up all of the triathlete specific information there. Or if you end up calling in or just going to the website on your own, use the code triathlonTaryn. It's not going to save you any money because Health IQ is already
saving you the money.
Ideally saving you money. But let's Health IQ know that you came from us and helps support the show.
And our other sponsor, welcome to the show, Four Sigmatic and their mushroom coffees / drinks.
That's right. This is one that I actually use. I started using Four Sigmatic in early 2017 because I was finding that just the 3 cups of coffee that I have a day was enough to kind of get me addicted. Like I was feeling like I craved it, even though I didn't really want it.
And it didn't taste good.
And by the end of it, like you get that acid feeling and an energy crash at the end of the day. Not with Four Sigmatic. They only have 50 milligrams of caffeine, which is about a quarter to a half as much as a typical cup of coffee. And because it's mushroom based, you don't have that energy crash. You don't have the stomach rot. It's tasty stuff.
Well, and this applies too to non-coffee drinkers because these drinks have benefits that a lot of people can use or would be beneficial to them because they're benefits. So they're made out of mushrooms, all kinds of different mushrooms, cordyceps, lion's mane, chaga, and all of these mushrooms are being found. There's tons of research going into it that they're huge for things like, you know, immune function.
The chaga elixir is not necessarily a coffee, more of an immune booster.
Right. And then there's lion's mane, which supports memory and concentration. You had that this morning. You are clearly on the ball right now.
I am firing on all cylinders right now.
So really cool stuff. Tastes really good. You love the taste of it. You drink this stuff all the time now. And again, tons of benefits for coffee drinkers and non-coffee drinkers alike.
Yep. And we've worked out a deal with Four Sigmatic that if you go to foursigmatic.com/triathlonTaryn or use the coupon code triathlonTaryn, you can save 15% on any order. Not a first order, not a second order, not like limited time only, all the time. Disclosure, that is an affiliate link. So it does help us out if you use that, but help me help you.
Yes, it's good. Go buy it. Yes. Now on to the show.
Today's guest is Matt Dixon, who is the head coach of the Purple Patch Fitness Squad. He's also author of The Well-Built Triathlete, The Fast Track Triathlete, which are some of the most recommended and highly rated triathlon books on Amazon. And he's also host of the new Purple Patch podcast. That was a tough intro to get out. We met up with Matt a couple of weeks ago while he was doing a training camp in Scottsdale with a handful of pro triathletes, notable athletes out there like Sam Appleton, fourth in the world in the Half Ironman World Championships last year in 2017, Sarah Piampiano, multiple Ironman champion, Kevin Collington, multiple Ironman champion, Laura Siddle, multiple Ironman champion, who was on the podcast just recently. He also brought out some of the tippy top of the spear elite age group triathletes who were able to keep up to these pros. So we got to follow them around for a couple of days and see basically the training methodology is something that you're going to hear Matt say a lot. It's a dictionary. And we got to kind of experience how he approaches training, not just for pros, but also for elite age groupers and age groupers all around. And that's one of the most important takeaways that I think every single triathlete listening to this will be able to benefit from, because his methodology is all about training the right amount for you. And he explains how that's different for pros, where, you know, the idea for pros is more is better, but that doesn't tend to work for the average age grouper. And if anything, it'll probably be doing more damage and making you slower when you train more. And he explains why this is so different for pros than it is for age groupers. And something that we didn't quite get entirely into, but Matt and I talked about in the following days after we recorded this, was one athlete named Sami Inkinen, who was, granted, he was a phenomenal youth athlete, so he had a really big engine to start with, but he was the CEO of a busy company named Trulia, which eventually ended up going public. And he was so busy that he could only train 12 hours a week, but on that 12 hours a week, he went under 9 hours in Kona. And that's because Matt approaches every single athlete not as a how much can you get in, like how close can you get to that 20 to 22 hour training week to get to and do well in Kona. He starts completely from the opposite end. He starts with what's your schedule outside of training and how does it relate to how we have to approach the training. Really, really different kind of methods that are becoming a lot more popular. And I was very excited to sit down with Matt, and I think that you will all really enjoy this interview. Unfortunately, no Triathlon Kim was not there, which is a shame because she loves a good accent and Matt has just a pistol of one. Enjoy the interview, everyone. Matt Dixon, head coach of Purple Patch Fitness. Thanks for having us here in the training camp that you're having down in Scottsdale. Let's talk about the camp. What are you guys doing here?
Well, we've got a mix of, this is one of our annual camps actually. So we traditionally actually head out to Hawaii, which they love because they sort of go on a winter holiday. But this year we decided to mix it up a little bit, and it's really our pro squad that's here. So we have nearly all of our professional athletes that we coach, but we also included a few of our elite amateurs. We do sort of 10 days of really immersive sort of ground setting for the season. So there's a lot of, even though it's an individual sport, a lot of team building, a lot of sort of vision setting for the athletes, and really not just about the very hard work that we do here, but it's more importantly really going through each athlete and setting our lens on what they have to go home and work on, especially if they're going home into their environment that isn't in San Francisco with me, where I'm based. You sort of call it an empowerment camp in a way, you know, get everyone together, let's set the lens, we've got a big season ahead, and hopefully they leave with 2, 3, 4 things to work on.
Who do you have here?
We have everyone, really. We have Sam Appleton, who was fourth at the World Championships last year in 70.3. Kevin Collington, who's an Ironman champion. Sarah Piampiano, multiple Ironman champion. Laura Siddle, multiple Ironman champion. The only person that's sort of missing is Jesse Thomas. He's just very busy. He's just had a second child and is very busy with Picky Bar. So we actually made a strategic decision to say, hey, stay at home. And then we have a really interesting host of elite athletes, many of the best in the world. And then my favorite part actually is our three athletes that are just converting from amateur to pro. And so they've sort of got their journey ahead of them. So that's Laurence Delisle, Sonia Bracegirdle, and Cecilia Davis-Hayes, who's just finished her first year as a pro very successfully.
Oh yeah, that's exciting. I was talking to another coach who was just coming from the TBI conference, and he was saying the exact same thing, that first year as a pro is really exciting because there's so much to learn from and there's so much that you have to learn about them.
Yeah, and it's all about timing. So it's really, you know, there's as an amateur, I think many amateurs like take their pro card way too early, and they sort of get good, they get a few results, and they're like, wow, I've qualified to pro, I'm going to go pro. I really believe in multi-year development for all athletes, but especially at the world-class level. And so for these three athletes, they've been very patient. They've allowed us to sort of progress them. And now it's sort of, we celebrated. We said to Sonia, okay, you're ready. And now she's actually ready to convert to being professional and be successful at that level. And so even the first year, I think, is a journey of experience gathering and real learning, because it's such a different environment.
Yeah, totally different race tactics. Can you give me an idea of what a typical day is like? When we walked in, you kind of snickered about what you had just put the gang through.
Yeah, it's very interesting, because I think that there are perceptions that it's almost like Navy SEAL training when you go away for a training camp. But this year, more than any other year, we've got a really broad range of where individual athletes are. So we have a few athletes that are actually getting ready to race. They're going to head back to the Southern Hemisphere and racing in New Zealand and Australia. So they're far ahead on their fitness relative to others that maybe had a December Ironman and had most of, you know, the time up to the holidays essentially off, and they're just building up over sort of the last week or two. So it's highly individual. At the same time, we like to test the athletes and challenge them a little bit. And so yesterday they did a swim. Most of the athletes did a swim that was about 6,500 yards, and it had some challenge in there. It was a little thresholdy, a little bit of speed. Then they did an easy ride in the middle of the day. And last night we really tested them with what we call a strength endurance run, which is multiple loops of a progressively building to close to maximal effort, high speed, high power run. And there's some fast downhill running. So it made them sore. And we come off of that speed and power, and then we sent them long today. So they did close to 100 miles, which meant that, I mean, my suffering was terrible. I had to sit in a car following them along for 5 hours.
You look bushed right now.
I was very brave. In fact, it's why I treated myself to a beer while we're talking. Yeah.
Yeah, hard earned. I mean, yeah, deservedly so. And you said something to me while we were chatting a couple days ago. You said that you don't want them to know what each day's workout is going to be.
Yeah, in a camp environment, it's actually very different when we're at home, because one of the things that I like athletes to do when they're at home is to see the landscape of the training that's coming. Look at the week. This is very similar for an amateur athlete as well. What are the key sessions? What are the ones that I really have to be ready for? And then what are the supporting sessions that are going to facilitate recovery, enable yourself to prep for a key session, et cetera, et cetera. So at home, I really encourage the athletes to know what's happening. Here, I like to see in action how athletes respond and self-manage. And so we might give them a theme of what's coming. And we might say, for example, I said, tomorrow is an easier day. We're going to do a swim and a prep day. And on Tuesday, we will be doing intervals. But I won't tell them exactly what those intervals are going to be. Are they going to be hill reps? Are they going to be speed? Are they going to be bike run? They know it will be bike with runoff, I think. But I like athletes to self-manage both on the fly and just see how they react to situations, because you start to learn personality, how they deal with adversity, some of their resilience and some of the areas that we can actually help them more. And so we keep them guessing over a camp environment. Although after the guys that have been here for longer start to know my tricks. And so most people knew that there was going to be one lot more loop on the strength run. We're not done, and they weren't done. They did one extra because it's a Dixon special to add a little interval on the end.
So you're doing this, I guess it's sort of making sense in my head that you're doing it to see how hard they push themselves and moderate to, I guess, get a sense of the personality of the athlete. That if there's somebody that just likes to open it up like crazy, that might be somebody that potentially you might have to hold back in the training.
Exactly.
Because left to their own devices, that they'll cook themselves.
It couldn't be better said, because I think that, look, across most people that undertake the sport, especially if they identify themselves as triathletes, motivation is not a challenge. And I think that the working hard is easy. Where the real skill comes in, where real performance comes out, and is moderating that work with the courage to rest, the courage to peel back. And so we want to sort of teach them a little bit of self-management. And then the other side of it is, I just want to see how they respond to challenging situations. So when you give them one more interval, when they're not looking for it, look, what's the body language? Is the body language, all right, I'm going to maximize what I can on the day? Or is the body language cowering? And if it's cowering, and then that's something to actually be worked on. So yeah, it is. It's how they deal with adversity, how they deal with surprises. Because ultimately in triathlon, across all distances, no matter how prepared, you will have surprises. So it's good to actually see it in a living environment so you can help them.
Yeah, that's interesting. As a whole, what at, say, this point in the season before, let's assume, say, an age grouper is coming into their main training. It's before they're really getting into race season and a big prep. Mm-hmm. What should somebody at this point in the season be trying to accomplish with a training camp?
I think it's, as much as anything, not be a hero. And so I think that a properly designed training camp, and there are two types of camps to start. There are training escapes where you go away and find warm weather and do a bunch of training. Or there's a training camp which is sort of coach supervised. And in that secondary example, which is in my lens, a training camp, the biggest thing that should come out of it is education. Because any single week of training or few days of big training, that isn't going to define your season. But you should be going away to a training camp and immersing yourself in the process and training in front of a supervised coach who's hopefully good quality that can give you advice that then you can go and apply to all of your weeks of training when you go home. And so any single camp is never that important from a training environment. Globally, progression, it comes back to how do you actually create great performance? And it is never in a giant leap. And so a training camp, many people make the mistake of thinking, it's a camp, I'm going to hammer myself and I'm going to make this huge leap in performance. And that's a really risky and actually ultimately not fruitful mindset. It's much better to realize the performance comes out of consistency of specific work and you are incrementally taking baby steps. And so, yes, you will do more work because you're not working professionally while you do a training camp. Yes, it's okay to challenge yourself. But the real value is, can you actually go home with 2, 3, 4 things that you're going to go and implement to your daily training at home to help you become a better athlete over the coming weeks, months, and dare I say, even seasons? And so I think that's the most important thing. The second thing that I'd say is really valuable is if you are doing an early season camp, it's much better to actually work on elements that are a little bit removed from the race-specific training that you're going to do leading up to your race. So if you were a half Ironman or an Ironman athlete, that's obviously a resilience endurance type discipline, especially for amateurs. So you're going to do plenty of mileage, plenty of hours to get ready for those races. So at this time of the year, it's better to work on strength work going uphill, some speed work, some power work, and actually treat yourself more as a technician that's learning to do things well with a little bit of a sprint Olympic distance type mindset so that you can have building blocks of power that then when you layer on the miles, you can be more successful, which is really upside down than how most people think. It's winter, I'm going to go and do piles of miles.
Yeah.
But it's cold everywhere. The days are short. It doesn't make any sense practically for very busy amateurs. Building base is a really outdated mindset of practical triathlon training for the vast majority of people that undertake it. So we flip it upside down and say, hey, the base is going to happen when you start training for your races. You do it most of the season when the weather's good. Now over the winter months, become a technician, work on some speed, work on some strength, and then carry it into the next time, which is the middle of the season. Very upside down than I think traditional coaching models, I would say.
Yeah, I think traditional coaching models, and I'd be one of the people that's guilty of going to a training camp and just seeing how long I can hold on with the massive increase in volume. Can you put yourself in your pro's shoes and think to when they're hopping on the plane and leaving, what are they going to be thinking after this camp?
I think it's a wonderful, for them, I think it's a great coming together as a squad. And I think that most professional squads out there, some of them live with each other and train with each other all the time. We're not like that. We get together frequently. And while it's a really individual sport, they are all uniting behind a methodology, behind a coach. So there is a common purpose and a common set of beliefs, a common set of values, of culture. And so when you bring like-minded people together, it's really energizing emotionally. So when they're going to get on the plane, they're going to be physically exhausted, but emotionally energized and hopefully excited for the journey ahead. You know, we do it in the middle of January. They're coming off the natural holidays that everyone universally sort of embraces, the the holidays into the new year, this is a wonderful way to actually accelerate and say, okay, now it's coming. And so I find that this winter camp is just a great lens setter, excitement, get the journey going, but also sort of reestablish the relationship, reestablish a joint sort of cause for individuals and a team as a whole, I would say.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's going to be fun to follow you guys around over the next couple of days. Yeah. Looking forward to it. Let's talk about Purple Patch. First thing, can you just explain where Purple Patch comes from, what it means?
Yeah, so I'm obviously not from the States, although I am an American citizen.
I would have guessed Boston, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm a Jersey boy. Yeah. Actually, I grew up in Southend, which is in Essex, east side of London. If there's an equivalent of where I grew up, it would be a little bit like the Jersey Shore and then me saying, oh, I'm from New York. So I'm not really actually from London. I'm kind of from the Jersey Shore with all of the same stereotypes ringing true of my hometown. But Purple Patch is a very common English saying that you know, sort of literally translated is the time of your life that you're performing at your optimal level. And it's very utopian. We sort of live in this, you know, the quest is this peak state, this time where things are unstoppable. It's a great period of flow. And we know that you can't exist in there all the time. Life will have peaks and valleys. But with good habits, with a smart approach, hopefully those little purple patches, whether you're an athlete or not, can last longer and can be more frequent. And I think that's the mission of Purple Patch, where we talk about empowering and educating every human being to reach their athletic potential. So that sits under the umbrella of the name, which is Purple Patch. And so that's how it was born now 12 or 13 years ago.
Yeah. I like it. I would not have guessed that in a million years, but I was listening to your new podcast and the episode 2, which was kind of like episode 1. First one was an introduction. Welcome. We're launching a podcast. And hearing your story about going through being an elite swimmer and doing the 75,000 meters in a matter of days and then translating that training and training in massive volume to triathlon, hearing your story about how you basically just became chronically fatigued.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the genesis of your methodology now. Mm-hmm. I believe the words that you used, I'll paraphrase a little bit, is like getting everyone to their maximum amount of performance and the key being there.
Yep.
Which is very different between amateurs and pros. Can you talk a little bit about that methodology? And we'll say that if anyone wants to hear your backstory, just go and listen to your podcast. You explain it better than I could ever tease out of you here.
Well, it's a great question because that sort of, I always talk about the performance that you can reach within context of your life. And so if we look at, you know, here, my mindset as I sit this week with my professional athletes is unapologetically world-class performance. So these are athletes that have committed everything to becoming the best that they can in the world. And what that means for them is that the center pillar of their life is everything that wraps around them becoming the best athlete that they possibly can. Their training, their sleep, their nutrition, their fueling, their hydration, their recovery, their massage. You can imagine everything that goes into optimal sports performance. And so that's central. And what we have to do with these guys then is try and support that with some semblance of a normal life. And so that's your family and relationships, maybe even children, social life, but certainly the anchor of their life in this short period of time when they're a professional athlete is sports performance. It's the only way to actually be able to pursue world-class performance unapologetically. Unfortunately, I think the sport as a whole tries to mimic that. Mm-hmm. And what I see is a whole bunch of burnout, a whole bunch of pressure on athletes where amateur athletes are trying to look at what these pros do, take these training approaches and methodologies and dump it on top of a really busy life. I have a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde mindset where I say, okay, that's my professional and very elite amateurs. Now, what are we trying to accomplish with the rest of our athletes, which tend to be really busy, time-starved athletes? And it is completely different. Because my quest, when I sort of say if an amateur in my mind is nailing it, they are improving in their sport, they are achieving their goals hopefully, but not at the expense of their health, their work, and their life performance, wrapping up in family. So actually, what we're trying to do with a purple patch athlete is we want you to improve. But by undertaking this multi-sport lifestyle, which is wonderfully healthy because it includes three disciplines and strengths and maybe a fourth discipline, by adopting this lifestyle that hopefully you can do over a long period of time, it has to be integrated into your life. And by doing that, so it cannot be separate, it cannot be myopically built, it has to actually be integrated and woven into the fabric of your life, so that by doing so, you improve your health, you improve your energy that you have at work, and you can bring the best version of yourself that you possibly can to your family and relationships. And that is the quest. So it's two missions. Yeah, sports performance, but within context of your busy life.
And sometimes that means training less.
It means training less. And the thing that is very challenging for athletes is people have a preconceived notion of how much they have to do. Mm. And I'll tell you a very quick example of it. A few weeks ago, just before the holidays, I was doing a speech to a triathlon club. It was a big triathlon club. I think there were about 150 people in attendance. And the first question I asked was, okay, for you guys, hands up in here who is a half Ironman or Ironman athlete. And about 130 of the 150 people put up their hand. Okay, so most people here participate in half Ironman distance or Ironman. How many hours a week do you have to train to be successful within context of your goals, be successful at those two distances? And the hours per week range that they came up with was between 18 to 22 hours. So some people said 20, some people said 18, some people said 22, someone said 35. So I just asked a follow-up question. Okay, hands up in here who has 20 hours a week to train, and no one put up their hand. So it's like, okay, we've got this, you know, Houston, we have a problem here. It's
so how are people actually qualifying?
Yeah, this is your perception of what is successful, but none of you have what it takes. And ultimately, over the course of the conversation, we dismantled that myth. And we actually said the biggest mistake for any amateur athlete is to start with how many hours a week do I have to train? They should start at the other end of the equation. What is the landscape of my life, my non-negotiables, my work, my family, my sleep, which is a really important component to build a platform of health? Your training should sit on a platform of sleep and nutrition, so you have time, and integrate into the fabric of your life. And if you start from that equation, you come up with how many hours you typically have. Then the question should be, okay, I have this many hours. How do I optimize them? And for some people, that might be, I only have 6 hours a week. Well, maybe Ironman isn't a good thing. Maybe you should thrive and have fun at...
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Matt. No, don't be ridiculous.
People have this badge Ironman or nothing. To go to Ironman. Get involved in the sport. And even in a year where things get really busy, you know, I've done an Ironman last year. We have a lot of purple patch athletes. I did an Ironman, but this year my two kids are going off to college. So it's going to be crazy because I've got school trips. Don't do an Ironman. It's okay.
You can come back to it.
And you can come back to it when life ebbs a little bit. Life is flowing right now, so be smart. So it's a very pragmatic lens of really trying to create longevity and not this sport being a monkey on your back, which I think is a mistake of the sport at large, to be honest.
Well, it's something that at the conference we were just at, I think that Ironman is starting to acknowledge that they have become associated with triathlon, that triathlon is Ironman, and that's actually a problem.
Yeah.
Because it helps Ironman, maybe in the short term, because you have this massive influx of athletes, but they've got about a 40% churn rate that people will come, do one Ironman, and then they're gone.
Yep.
Because it's not sustainable. And then people don't come back because they either have an extremely bad experience, or they're burnt out, or they mm-hmm. didn't enjoy it, or they stepped up too quickly and got injured. And yep, and something that specifically over the last couple of weeks I've been publicly quite slammed about is because I'm very critical of those people that step up too early. Mm-hmm. And I believe that triathlon is an amazing sport that you can do for 60 years of your life, but not if you're doing it to a point that's rushed and unhealthy.
Ultimately, if it's unsustainable, you won't be able to sustain it. Yeah. But I would even broaden it, because I think the thing that's wonderful about the sport is multi-sport. So I think it goes really broad and range, where people identify as what's happened in the sport is everything is pushed from a coaching. I think coaches have some to blame, from products where there's an over obsession with the really critical equipment and the incredibly expensive equipment. And of course, companies have to sell what they have to sell. And then at an organizational standpoint, the inspirational component of Ironman and half Ironman, it has had the effect that it only attracts the overly obsessive athlete that either have an on-off switch on I am an Ironman or I'm not. Mm-hmm. But actually, if you take a step back and say, hang on, this is a wonderfully healthy sport. Swimming, you feel really healthy afterwards. It's non-weight bearing. It's great cardiovascular. Riding, you get to explore wonderful places. If you can enjoy the actual essence of riding your bike, you can create great muscular endurance on it. And some running is really good for weight bearing, but being a pure runner is quite risky so far as injury. Weaving the three together, wow. But there is all sorts of adventures and things that you can do that are not Ironman. And it's a great journey, and I understand why people want to do it, but don't think that that is everything, especially when... So I really try and get people to embrace the long term and say, not what am I going to race this year, but this is something that I do. And you can't have that mindset if the training is a monkey on your back. So it's a point of angst for the rest of your family. You're constantly challenged and overcommitted. And the pressure of trying to get to the hours that you have to do is so much that you end up going down a cycle of failure. Or you train so hard, as you say, that you get frequent sickness, frequent injury. And then we're not creating the scenario of boosting health and life. You're actually fit and fatigued. And that's not a great way to go through life globally anyway. So yeah, I agree.
Some good context that I've heard that you should probably correct, because I've kind of heard it through other podcasts and sussed it out a little bit, that Sarah Pianpiano, for example, because she was coming from a point of regaining fitness, having been on Wall Street, smoking 1 to 2 packs of cigarettes a day, that as she started thinking about becoming a pro triathlete first, and then also getting very serious and pot committed to Kona, that over those years, you were holding her back in certain instances.
I think it's a coach's job. In fact, when Sarah reached out for coaching, you don't get in Sarah's way. She's a force of nature. And for that, she's a wonderful athlete to coach. But an athlete like that, that has great belief in self and has a very strong vision of where she wants to go, my job is actually to strongly manage to protect her from herself. And every coach that she interviewed, when she reached out to me for coaching, which is now several years ago, I've been coaching Sarah for 7 years or so, 8 years now. Every coach said, yes, go pro and learn the ropes from the inside. And I said to Sarah, I will not coach you if you do turn pro. You have to develop physically. You have to develop emotionally. You have to learn how to train. And I actually held her back for 2 years. And she really grew emotionally, learned how to train, learned how to self-manage, and all of the supporting habits, great fueling, strength and conditioning, great recovery, where then when she turned pro, she was wise and ready and resilient enough that she could immediately be competitive. And I think that that was the thing that gave her longevity, where she's now still as committed, still as progressively improving. And every year has, with some obstacles, because there's always failures and struggles and obstacles, but she continues to progress as an athlete and become better and better and better. If I had have rushed her early, my guess is she would be out of the sport by now.
Really?
And I absolutely.
Like going in with that investment banker
going
mindset?
Going in with the investment banker. And, you know, it wasn't just regaining fitness. She was a ski racer originally. In fact, she's tiny. You know, she is a very small athlete. You know, she was a ski racer that was weighed 40 or 50 pounds more. That was her athletic background. She did have a cross-country background in high school, but she then went to Wall Street, and she was, I mean, overworked, underslept, smoking, poor eating, plenty of New York drinking and late nights. And so there was a real conversion that had to happen to help accelerate her on her way. And it can never happen over months. It happens over seasons. And so the only way to be successful is create a sustainable program. That's a world-class example, but it's absolutely the same for amateur athletes that are just getting into the sport or are looking to take the next step, et cetera, et cetera.
So what are the first principles of coaching an age grouper? And let's say not you coaching an age grouper, but a lot of the people listening would be, they're in their first year in the sport, and even the idea of getting a $15 training plan online is kind of new to them.
Yeah, sure.
What are the, if you had to pick two or three first principles that, like, big picture, here's what you're trying to accomplish and understand in your first couple of years?
I think the first is not take it too seriously. You know, the first is actually fall in love with the process, not the outcome. So I think people are way too outcome and results focused. And so your first mission is to enjoy the journey of development. So the actual habit of these three disciplines and your training, you're taking an athletic mindset, which is positive. You don't want to just exercise in them. You want to have structured training, but enjoy the process of just overall improvement and self-improvement. Because if you're just starting the sport, if you're really patient and you love the process, you're going to look back in a year and say, I can't believe what I couldn't do then. And that far outweighs trying to, I've got to train for this event. Those are just nice stepping stones and opportunities to learn on the way. So that would be number one, embrace the journey and the process, and don't automatically tie on to anchors of events as being your identity. The second would be establish really good habits to start. So things that can last. Don't try and buy your way to success by automatically going out and spending lots of money on the best equipment. That's actually not that important. Enjoy great habits of learning to become an artist. So thinking about swim form, bike form, how you ride a bike, running form, etc. Really good habits around fueling. Because even right at the start, like the number one habit that we like athletes to do is following every workout, make sure you're consuming calories. So establish that type of thing straight up front. So establish good habits, a big conversation about that. I'll leave it at that. And I'd say those are the two. People always ask, what's your best investment to start? I think that you say one of two things for that, which would be surround yourself with community, if you possibly can. So groups, people that can provide advice, hopefully sound advice, people can make the journey fun. Don't be a solo tracker trying to work it all out for yourself. And find a mentor, and that might be a coach. And it's great to have a really good coach, ideally someone that's local that you can talk to. I think that's really great for beginners that can actually, you know, be part of a community, be part of a tri club or a coach that can really help journey. And if you want an online coach or you want real expertise, have that when you've progressed and enjoyed the sport and say, now it's time to take it to the next level. And if you feel like your local situation is not optimal, you can look outside. But I would say go local to start. Find someone that you can surround yourself with and have fun.
Yeah, my coach is one of my best friends, and yeah, and he's a phenomenal athlete, like a 154 kind of Olympic guy. And he was described to me early on as he's like a carrot, because he's always there training with you. And because he's that dedicated, that fast, that committed, that consistent, he's like the sun rising and setting, that you just know that every single day there's going to be something. And that was something in the first few years I started aspiring to, because I was looking at it going like, oh, I need to train every day.
Yep.
And look at him. He eats really healthy. Okay, maybe I should eat really healthy. Like, it was because I could see it. It was a model of what I wanted to become, and not just, here's your training today, go do it.
And I would add one thing to it, because I think that's really important. This is a sport, because it's three disciplines, because there's equipment, because there's challenges, things like fear of water or terrain on the bike, etc., and equipment on the bike. It is a sport that is and there's an element of nutrition as well, which is a whole world of misinformation and confusion. It is a sport that is prone to this blitz of information that really confuses athletes. It's a huge barrier. What am I supposed to do? Realize that even at the very top level, so at the professional level, in fact, the speech that I gave my pros the other day, we have a mantra, nail the basics. And so what we know is that when you have a smart and appropriate training program for you, that is supported with a backbone of good nutrition. You don't have to be a monk. You don't have to weigh your food.
Is there a resource that you would recommend, or a starting place that people would learn about nutrition?
Yeah, I'll tell you in a second.
Okay, okay.
Backbone of good nutrition, adequate recovery, and consistent strength and conditioning. When we have those four elements, athletes accelerate. So it's very, very basic habits, really basic habits. And if you can get a good program for you, which is supported with good nutrition and enough recovery and an element of strength, that's 95% of all performance. That's all our pros focus on. And then very small is all of the incremental stuff. But that's the stuff that takes up 95% of the media.
Yeah, the wind tunnels.
Yeah, don't worry about nonsense, absolute nonsense. So you want to look for good resources. You know, I'll start with us. We do a backbone for Purple Patch is education. We actually have an education subscription just for that. So look for really valid resources that can provide sensible and balanced advice across all elements of performance. A great resource for swimming, Tower 26. You know Jerry Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah.
It's a
fantastic.
Great resource where you can actually really get firm understanding. A secondary resource, Swim Smooth. That's a good online resource. Mm-hmm. Not exactly the same, but two good resources. Coaching methodology. There's lots of really pragmatic advice, but you want to look for the people that understand the life of an amateur. With nutrition, it's really polluted, really confusing. We have a...
Yeah, do you go vegan or do you go keto? And both camps are equally as passionate and have an equal amount of studies to point to. Confusing.
No
so
comment.
Confusing. no comment. I'll say this is an interesting thing. Is it a bit of an aside? I was actually just recommended to something called Habit.com from Brian McKenzie, the CrossFit endurance fella, who we just I think. An hour ago launched a podcast with him where they try to not start from do you do keto or do you do vegan or high carb or low carb, but what does your body need through a blood test?
Mm-hmm.
What should you respond to? So that was just interesting. Yep. Not a sponsored thing, but if the science of habit is all it's cracked up to be, I think it's something that 7-year-olds across North America should be given.
It comes down to very, very basic principles. I will say that any diet approach with a name is to me evangelical, and there is still yet to be, in effect, even if you speak to the most fat adaptive, by way of an example, fat adaptive athlete, they understand there is an absolutely critical and necessary role for carbohydrate. In fact, you know, Sami Inkinen, who I had on my podcast, that's a wonderful business leader, but also an elite amateur athlete in a very time-starved manner. It's episode 3 of the Purple Patch podcast. For any time-starved individual, I think it's required listening. But his company that he's leading now is trying to reverse type 2 diabetes through nutritional intervention plus a medical intervention and having quite startling results. He is a pioneer of sort of fat-adaptive eating. But if you talk to Sami about his approach to fueling in a half Ironman or Ironman, he only consumes sugar. And so it's all within context. But what happens with evangelical messaging is only half the message gets across, and people would assume that he would be fueling on olive oil. It's not the case. He just believes rightly that there is an overconsumption of sugar in the Western diet, and in your daily life, refined sugar doesn't really have a role. And so we want to have plenty of vegetables, plenty of protein, a little bit of starchy carbohydrate, lots of good fats. But in high-intensity training and in racing, your body is an engine that requires sugar, and that's a huge component. And so, yeah, just a small point on nutrition, that anything requires context.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about your two books? I'm sure you hear a lot of glowing reviews about it, and you can go on Amazon, and anytime you need a pick-me-up, read all the good reviews that you've got about it. In behind the scenes, too, this conference, when I mentioned that after the conference I was spending some time with you, people were just in awe of your books. They're like, his stuff is really good. Do you want to talk about the premise of them?
Yeah, I mean, Matt, really off the back of what we've discussed in many ways. So the first book, God, I can't even remember the name of it. No, it's the Well Built Triathlete. And the reason I wrote that book...
With Jesse Thomas on the cover, very epic photo, yeah.
Never put a book in... we've got an athlete coming in. This is Ed joining us here.
Oh, Ed.
On TV. Ed is one of our Purple Patch new amateur athletes. Who is a very...
I hear you had a hard day.
It was a hard day.
That's good.
he's, He's a very busy amateur that has an engine the size of a rhinoceros, and coming to triathlons, we're going to take him on an elite amateur journey, I hope.
Sounds like he needs another hard day tomorrow.
He needs a little easy day tomorrow. Yeah, pretty much every day. This is baptism by fire. But yeah, the well-built triathlete was... Yeah, a few years ago, I was really just asked to write the book, and I thought, I've never thought of writing a book. But really what that was a resource manual of the Purple Patch methodology, written specifically as the foundational elements of how I believe an approach to sport, and specifically triathlon in this case, can be successful. So it really dives into all of the elements that I think are critical, not just training approach, but the supporting habits. What does it mean when we talk about recovery, strength, nutrition, an overall methodology of season planning, etc.? And the book was really well received. We had a lot of follow-up from the book. And one of the elements I think that was really successful was all the case studies, because people read it and said, shit, I'm John. and so that enabled us to start.
And John was the case of the 20 hour or nothing.
Exactly. We had many case studies in there, you know, whoever, I can't remember the names now. But the second book that we just released in October was really a leap from that to say, actually, let's exclude the pros, let's exclude the sort of over obsessive. How do you crack the code for the very busy, time-starved person that is trying to, in my mind, thrive in sport but thrive in life? And so this is an education to start, and then actually a training program to build you into either half Ironman or Ironman performance the last 14 weeks, and then a comprehensive strength and conditioning program. So I've sort of given away our code of what we've been successful, of working with so many really busy, time-starved CEOs and people that are trying to integrate this sport into life. And ultimately, it's been successful. So yeah, the book, as you say, it's quite humbling, but it's been well-received so far.
Yeah, I think the well-built triathlete is, it's almost always either the first or second suggestion. And we've got more pros coming in. I didn't plan on asking about this, but do you want to talk about a little bit about the role of strength training? Because it's something that is kind of re-emerging, that Dave Scott was doing immense amounts of it in his prime, and then it sort of went away, and now we've got a lot of guys like Ryan Flaherty at Nike that are starting to do it with marathoners, and everyone from a marathoner to a running back in football, but showing that even endurance athletes benefit from heavy strength work.
Yep.
Yeah, do you want to talk about your stance on that?
I mean, it's nothing new for us. Right from the birth of my coaching and Purple Patch, we have had year-round strength and conditioning for every level of athlete, period. And the role of strength in endurance sports is as evangelical as our discussion on nutrition. And there are people that don't believe in it at all and it has no role. There are other people that are on the other side of the equation that they almost think it is ahead of swim, bike, and run. So my first take on it is I view it as a critical supplement. So the bullseye of a triathlete is swimming, cycling, and running. We then want to integrate supporting strength and conditioning. And the reasons are much more inspiring than the reason that most people view strength and conditioning, which is injury prevention. No one wants to just do something to avoid something, because most of us believe it won't happen to us. Yeah. You know, I haven't been injured so far, so why should I do it? I won't do it.
Yeah, no, I'm training to get better. What are
exactly
you talking about? Yeah.
So, but in fact, the benefits of strength and conditioning, I view it through two things. Firstly, at a human level, we are designed to move heavy things. And so from a functional movement, especially in today's society where people spend too much time sitting down, it's really, really good just to become functionally healthy. But on top of that, when you integrate it and align it with the endurance component, there is a real performance benefit to it. We increase the number of muscle fibers in the usable mix. The athlete becomes more in tune, more synchronized with brain talking to muscle. And we have a platform to build postural fitness so that they can retain a key element in swimming, cycling, and running, which is retained posture as fatigue comes in. And so it is by itself not going to make you more powerful on the bike or not going to make you a faster runner, but I see it as a supporting gateway to help you maximize the critical swim, bike, and run. And that's inspiring and universally. I mean, it's interesting. You know, people say, oh, well, they've started to work out that marathon runners are doing it. Several years now, almost every elite athlete across cycling, running, swimming, triathlon, rowing, have integrated strength and conditioning. It's now spreading out to actually saying, yeah, it's an accepted part of the norm. And I think that anyone that is poo-pooing its role in triathlon, the reason that they avoid it is they say, people don't have enough time, so we just have to focus on swim, bike, and run. But I think everyone can have 2 to 3 sessions of 15 to 20 minutes in a week dispersed over the course of the week, and you can get a lot of value out of those very short sessions.
Yeah.
And so I like to integrate it.
Yeah, I've been doing quite a bit of it this winter because I've ignored it for a number of years, having actually come from a strength background, mm-hmm. and now recognizing that as I'm getting into the later stages of a half Ironman, that it's not my engine that's breaking down. It's the body. Like, I'm not getting across the line and not being able to get across the line faster because of my lungs or a cardiovascular reason. It's mechanical breakdown from the pounding. Yeah, it's been interesting. Let's start wrapping up. I want to be respectful of your time, let you get back to beating up on the pros. Why another podcast? There's, I want to say, about 200 triathlon podcasts now.
Exactly. Well, the good news is it's not a triathlon podcast. I'm unashamedly a triathlon coach, but I've been very lucky, I would say, to have the opportunity over the last 10 years to work with some very, very interesting people. And the thing that really interests me beyond helping people thrive in this sport is actually the broader topic of just human performance and human potential. So this podcast is really taking all of the lessons that we've learned, especially with very busy time crunch people. And I, on an individual basis, I work with elite athletes, but I get to work with a lot of CEOs and many of actually some of the leading CEOs, to be honest, in the world of business. And there's this amazing cross-pollination or parallel between the characteristics of what makes our professional successful with these CEOs. And so the podcast is really about exploring the concept of, yes, how do you actually integrate sport and an athletic mindset into your life, not just to improve, but to actually help you improve your energy in the day, improve your critical thinking and decision-making, to actually become healthier, to be a better version of yourself. And so the podcast is breaking up into really 3 main components: myself educating, interviews with many of the people that I have coached, hence Sami being on there recently, but we're going to have many CEOs and busy executives that have successfully integrated the athletic mindset into their professional life to great success in sport, but mostly in their busy life. And then finally, we're going to bring in a whole host of experts that I know in their fields. And the next guy coming on, Dr. Chris Winter, an expert in sleep and performance. Well, I think that's really interesting. So I have very little interest. I don't need to contribute to triathlon per se, because as you say, there are so many. But in human performance, I think there's a big void of that connection between athletic mindset and life performance. So that's what we're exploring.
How many, you've released 4?
We released a teaser plus 3.
The fourth is
coming out on Tuesday. And so far, so good. The reviews have been very positive. The numbers have been quite surprising. And, you know, there's still plenty of time for me to mess it up. So this is new. It's a different...
I don't know if you can. It's clear that you put a fair bit of work into it.
I like, you know, the books are really interesting, intellectual and personal challenge. And there's something about putting yourself out there. And, you know, I'm confidently putting it out there. You're like exposing yourself. And in a book, it's there forever. I think a podcast is very similar, where you're, you know, I'm really in an authentic way trying to put out what I believe. But at the same time, it's not coming back. It's always out there. And so I find it's something new. It's something challenging. And with the response that we've had so far, I'm going to keep doing it while people have interest. And it should be fun. And look, it's good fun. You get to have lots of good, cool conversations like we're having today.
You have a beer. I have a spritzy water.
What more can we dream of?
Huh? Yeah. I mean, I was doing some strength training. I squeezed that can really hard as I was lifting it up.
You had a little crush of it.
Yeah, exactly. Where should people check you out? Learn more about Purple Patch Wade besides the book, the podcast?
Sure. So Purple Patch Fitness is the website. We have a host of information on there. As I say, our newsletter, we do a free newsletter, which comes out about every 2 weeks, but it's all education based. I believe in sharing, not hiding what we believe. The podcast is the Purple Patch Podcast with two words. My Twitter handle is @PurplePatch. A lot of education that we push through there as well. And other social channels, of course. Instagram is Purple Patch Fitness.
And you do have, if people are interested in working with Purple Patch, you do have a online monthly coaching platform there. It's not just elites and pros that you're dealing with.
No, we work with, in fact, interestingly, one of our challenges is people perceive that we only work with elites. But I would say 25% of the athletes that are Purple Patch are non-competitive. They don't even participate in events. Another 30 to 40% are very much sort of looking to just integrate into the sport, having the sport raise their performance profile and competing. And then we have the people that are the identifying themselves as triathletes, let's put it that way. Very broad range, very community driven. And anytime anyone, here's another offer for you guys. Anytime anyone is in San Francisco, which is where we are based, and we have a thriving squad from our pros down to absolute beginners, if they want to jump into our squad sessions with no strings attached, people are always welcome. It's an open door for us. We love people to join in, come and have fun, stop by, we'll help them, and then we'll kiss them goodbye. So yeah, it's always a revolving door at Purple Patch.
That's a good place to end it. I'll link everything in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time here,
Thanks
Matt.
Thanks so much, Tim. Very interesting stuff. Yeah, great stuff. Cheers, mate.
If there was anything on the podcast that you heard and you want to know more about, you can visit our show notes at triathlonterran.com/topics/triathlonterranpodcast. We'll have all of the links listed there. Any other info that you may not have had time to write down or whatever, it's listed there for you in perpetuity.
Something newer, juicier, freer.
We love free.
We've had resources kind of scattered throughout the website for the past year that we've built up. Well, I have put that all on one single page on the website at triathlonterran.com/free resources. Just by entering your email address, you can get a free swim drill program, a free strength training program, a running drill program. And as we start coming out with things, everything will be there. So you can check it now. You can check it later.
Come early, come often. Mm-hmm. We'll be adding stuff all the time, so make sure you check it out frequently. Also, if you've got questions for Taryn, and many of you do, and you leave them in the YouTube comments, Facebook, Instagram, etc., we're trying to aggregate that all into one spot so everybody can see and hear the answer. And that's why we've now launched the Triathlon Trainiask podcast, because it's Trainiacs asking questions. So what we want you to do is head over to triathlonterran.com/trainiask. If you have a question, you'll record it and Taryn may answer it on the podcast. He's recording them every single weekday, and you can find the podcast on every single podcast player out there. And Trainiask is spelled TRAINIASK.
Short nuggets of info. Every episode, I guarantee under 10 minutes.
Perfect.
And it's hard to get me to stop talking. So this is a feat. Finally, last thing that you can do is, if you like this show or the Trainiask show when you check it out, head over to iTunes, give us a review, good, bad, indifferent. Hopefully 5 stars, because we're pretty awesome.
Reviews just really help us out.
It really helps with the iTunes algorithm. However it happens, it works. It's internet magic and helps other new or aspiring Trainiacs discover us. So that would be much appreciated.
Thanks, folks. See you next time.